and she will be talking to us about MITCHF online video resources for language apprentices and the diaspora, survival phrases, and micro grammar lessons.
Nigan Ninartim Massimao, le créateur, le bon Dieu, Roma la journée, Egua Kakiao, le mode, Ota Tiapichik, Marci Ditwan. Egua, le bon Dieu, Wichi Hinan, Kwayesk, Tiatoske Yanan, pour notre langue, pour kakio les langues, en danger, en city. Egua, Giti Staten, dans le terrain de mode de Hawaii, et Ayayan. Ni marci mitinawa, pour Oma la chance. Heather Sudadish Nakarshan, en MITCHF, Nia, Camperville, Manitoba aussi. Good morning, everyone. I just started by thanking the Creator for this day and for all of you here, and asking for help so that we can work for our languages and all the native languages. I also acknowledge the Hawaiian people and that we're on their territory. And then finally, I just introduced myself. My name is Heather Suter, and I'm from Camperville, Manitoba. I wasn't born there, but that's where I've lived for the last 15 years. So I'm new to this, so please bear with me. I'm not a practiced presenter. So I gave my traditional acknowledgments, and I'd also like to acknowledge mi parenti kayashos to my ancestors, Egualivieu, Pivivie, Kapigishwechik on the Chif, and the elders that speak in my language. So I'd like to just tell you a little bit about who I am, because I don't seem like I'm just, you know, when you think of indigenous languages, often people think of people with black hair, right, and darker skin. And Métis people, we come out mixed, all sorts of different colors, and that's just who we are, because that's part of our history. So I just thought I would tell you. So I'm just a language activist. I think I would call myself one of those hardcore ones you heard about yesterday. I'm an ordinary linguist. I do have some linguistic training at the graduate level, but I like it to be something that's going to help us produce new speakers. So I'm really focused on the people and what's going to work for our community. I'm Secretary Chesra of a new group, and that's Prairies to Woodlands Indigenous Language Revitalization Circle. The chair are two MITCHF speaking women, and we work right now on doing a master apprentice project that allows not only MITCHF speakers, but our kin and our relations that speak related languages like Cree and Ojibwe as well, because the jurisdictional lines of the federal government and the provincial government have put there, has separated us. That's not who we are. We've always gone across those lines through our kinship and our relational ties. And we didn't want to say, you know, because you're a Cree speaker and not a MITCHF speaker, you can't be part of our program. So I'm a graduate of the Master of Indigenous Language Revitalization Program at the University of Victoria. I'm also a language apprentice, so I'm reclaiming my language and my identity as I reclaim my language. That's something that has really come clear to me. And some background, I'm a formal simultaneous interpreter and translator in Japan. I lived in Japan for many years, and I fluent in Japanese. So that's who I am. And my relations. So my father is Ken Suter. He's Métis and Scots. My mother is Mildred Bringsley, and she's a European citizen of Norwegian and Austrian background. They're both monolingual English. My paternal parents were monolingual English on my father's side, and my maternal grandparents were multilingual. So I was maybe somewhat of a typical, raised in a typical Canadian family, in the sense that there was some language, different languages in my background. Some of this is cut off here. Okay, well, anyways. My grandmother, maternal grandmother and language loss. My grandmother was born in Fish Creek, Alberta, to Métis parents. And according to our oral history and our family, we spoke Southern MITCHF, Cree, and MITCHF French. And She stopped speaking anything but English after being placed in a Catholic institution. She and her siblings were placed in an orphanage and then went to a school there, and one of them died there, and she stopped speaking. Everybody stopped speaking. So that's what we found out, that after that no one would speak the language. It was unsafe. That was the feeling I got, and, you know, from listening. My multilingual great-grandparents, so Marie-Julie Bercourt was born in Lac Ste. Anne, Alberta, close to Edmonton, Alberta. And John Robinson, we're kind of unclear about great-grandfather Robinson, but they were involved in buffalo hunting, trade, farming, and my great-great-grandmother, great-great-great-grandmother was a medicine woman and went out to the buffalo hunts to help people when the smallpox epidemics were happening. And they were married in Great Falls, Montana, so this again shows that we have connections right across the border, you know, and we are actually split. The Métis people or Michif people are split by the medicine line, by the artificial border between the United States and Canada. There are many Michif speakers in North Dakota and some in Montana as well. This is my great-great-grandmother, Yoko Momawa, so my grandma's mom, and that was taken, we believe, near Fish Creek, Alberta, which is near Calgary. So who are the Métis, the Michif? Just to give you a little bit of background, we emerged as a new people in the 18th century in the Red River settlements, which is around Manitoba, Canada, the center of Canada, and live in, you know, Western Canada. And other Métis people were involved with the fur trade a lot and provisioning the fur trade. And so if you can imagine, the most of the routes were through rivers, so we were all over the place. And it just depended on who married whom, but we were a synthesis of indigenous and European peoples, mostly French and Cree-speaking peoples. Michif and traditional multilingualism. This is a quote from Howard's book. They said that we're exceptional linguists in the sense of being multilingual. We spoke at least two languages, French and Cree, and added other languages as needed. So we were often used as interpreters. That was something that we did. So it was kind of funny when I had 11 years old, I told my parents that I wanted to be an interpreter and learn five languages. My father kind of laughed, "You're a real throwback," he said to me. So we were forced to flee. There were dispersions. The Canadian government was not kind to Indigenous people in Canada. And so we lost what they called a rebellion, what we called resistance against the Canadian government at the Tosh, and we were dispersed. And the Canadian government made treaties, not with all Indigenous people in Canada, but many Indigenous people in Canada. They left us out. They thought because we were mixed that they could assimilate us, so they had other plans for us. So there are some communities that were, they joined other communities and made their own. So this is kind of how things happened, how we're dispersed. So you can see from this map, there's quite a few different languages that people speak, but central to our identity is Michif, but there are many people in my family that only spoke Cree, and there are people that only spoke Michif French, in the sense that, you know, in recent history, but in back, it really does seem that people were multilingual. Just like in Europe, it was a normal kind of thing to do. You lived next door to someone, you learned their language, you traded with them, you learned their language, you intermarried with them, you learned their language. It was all about what I call linguistic accommodation. So we really have no land. We shared the land at the time when we were coming into really understanding who we were as a people. We were in small bands, and most Indigenous people lived in small bands and interacted in small bands, not in large nations as it is now. So we don't have land, so it's really difficult for us to get together. So we're basically dispersed everywhere. Except for in Alberta, there's some settlements there, but that's very separate. So our language situation today, many elders still speak more than one language. My auntie, who you'll hear very soon, she speaks four languages. Okay, so sweet. And most Métis young people today only speak English, and transmission again stopped mostly as a result of the Indian residential schools, which we had in the United States and we had in Canada. and also day schools. In our case, Métis people mostly didn't go to residential school, but we went to the attached day schools, which were taught by the same people with the same attitudes. And so a lot of the same abuses happened. My husband, as a matter of fact, went to one of the day schools, and he told me that the kind of things that happened to him. So it went on for a very, very long time. Cultural multilingualism, it's natural for a Michif person to call their language Michif, because that's their identity. So they may not always speak the same language, but they call the language Michif. So that kind of makes it difficult from a language revitalization perspective, if you can imagine there are three different languages. Okay. So we have Southern Michif, which is a mix of French and Cree mostly. And it's spoken by maybe a few hundred people right now, maybe. We don't know, because we're dispersed. It's very hard, and Statistics Canada does a really lousy job of making census questions to try and tease out who's speaking what. So why aren't adults learning? Well, typical problems that we all have with, kind of feeling shame and, you know, having elders that maybe are not as kind to us, you know, when we're trying to speak. But a lot of it, too, is that people think that Michif is too difficult because it's a mix of two languages. I've heard that time and time again. They think it's really hard. So they go into class and they can't get it. A lot of them have these English intuitions about grammar, right, you know, and literacy. And Michif is a polysynthetic language, so it's lots of bits of meaning are strung together, right? And sometimes when you string those bits together, they kind of get fuzzy at the edges and the sounds change. And so it can be intimidating when you first start to learn the language. And you can't use your English intuitions very much. So the methods out there, Linguistees, adult immersion, we don't really have any. Master Apprentice, we just have this program that just started. So there's just really not a lot out there for adult learners. And so I started to think about what I needed to do. And I thought about how I learned Japanese, having been an interpreter and living in Japan for quite some time, and how I learned the language. When there were very few resources at the time I went. There was a Romanized dictionary, so written in alphabet, and that's all there was when it comes. So I just, because I'd learned some other languages in high school, I just thought, okay, we're gonna get the vowels, we're gonna get the sounds first. You know, I'm 16 years old when I'm thinking about this, right, moving through, and then the syllables, and then I gotta learn how to say some things, like what's this, what's that, and then some basic grammar. And learning the patterns in Japanese to figure out how to make something negative, something positive, something past tense. So I had those basic intuitions. And I thought, well, how can this help me inform the resource creation for adult learners in the diaspora and Master Apprentice programs? So here's a picture of our group. One of them, this is my auntie, Mata Grace, and there's Monok Freeman, and lots of other people. You'll see some people you might recognize here. There's a couple of people in the audience here that were there at the workshop. So we wanted to solve a real world problem, because these people are coming and they want to be able to do something in the language right away. So with Master Apprentice, many of you are of course familiar with that, or Mentor Apprentice, the book How to Keep Your Language Alive, people have been involved in these programs. Suggested that you learn some really useful survival phrases. So I thought about that, said, yeah, okay, so let's use these for survival phrases, and let's put it so that, because they don't have access to an elder right away, so they can use the computer and have this input, and then they can, and they'll have some input to base the learning of grammar on, so they have some meaning first. Can't maybe see her too well, but that's my Matan Grace. I don't know if this one is going to work, so I'm going to quickly go out. I need help. I need to get to the. I need to get the list. So, this is an example of one of the videos that I created. This was actually part of my master's project. And there's Matan Grace again. And hopefully we've got this loud enough. I won't play it too long because we don't have too much time, so provided the...
Kekwayanuma. 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 Pegwayanima and Yivranima and Yivranima and Yivranima and Yivranima.
Kekwe. So this is me Kekwe. Breaking it down into the sounds.
Ai.
Because these are going to be beginners.
Ai.
And then putting it together again. So
ai.
I won't show any more of this because we really don't have a lot of time. So I'm
going
to figure out how to. And it goes back at the end again, showing what the meaning is, and with my auntie repeating again and again, so people can go through this, so they can get the sounds, and then they can get the syllables, they can get the stress, and then they can do it again and again. So that's and how to get out of here. Period. So then I thought, okay, so that's what we did. In the middle of this grammar and making it with Schiff, there was a paper I read actually from this conference written by a group of people. It was presented by Connor Quinn at the University of Maine, but Andreas Nicholas Baer was Maliseet, so another Algonquian-related language on the east coast of Canada. And I read this and I thought, you know, there's something here. It resonates with what I already know about language learning. And it was really about taking things only one step at a time, like not giving charts, not giving paradigms, not doing any of that stuff, but just starting with a central idea and then just moving one step out from either side, sometimes putting stuff in. So no verb charts, no paradigms, you know, and working basically in a scaffolded manner. So you know what you start with and then you just move one step out. So kind of like when you're testing the water and you put your foot out there and you go, okay, I'm safe, I can take that step. And that's what I wanted to do for these people. So, yeah, thanks. We had a problem with the internet, so I had to put them on the desktop. That's why it's kind of a little bit disjointed here. I apologize for that. So this was so communication-based method basically to make your language. Michif, we have two genders. We take the Cree
next
gender.
Next we're going to talk about double gendered nouns. Nouns in Michif actually fall into two categories of gender, animate or inanimate, and masculine or feminine. Every noun is either animate or inanimate and masculine or feminine. So the fact that nouns in Michif are double gendered is something really interesting as far as I'm concerned. It really shows how we are Michif. Animate and inanimate is actually Cree in origin, that concept, those concepts, and masculine and feminine, of course, comes from the French. So,
there's an explanation.
Le yibo ana. Kegwa anima. Le violon anima. So when I was describing those nouns, I'm sure you heard me use le and la while I was doing that.
So I'll stop that. There. Just so you, so even though there was a bit of an explanation, a little bit of linguistic-y kind of explanation, it was scaffolded with showing exactly what the meaning was so that people could relate to that. And that was really important to me, that we'd leave no one behind, because this would be going out on YouTube, on the internet, or the apprentices that were coming into the Master Apprentice program would be using this, and they wouldn't have necessarily access to a linguist, they wouldn't have access to a speaker right away. They could always email me, but I wanted them to have as much support as possible. So the other thing is that we use video creation. The video creation was done on my iPhone that I have right here. That's the only thing I used. And I even did the editing on that. And I wanted to use everyday technology and show that you could produce things that are, you know, I mean, there's rough spots in there, right? You know, I know there are. But a non-specialist can do things with everyday technology that you have right in front of you, and then uploading it onto the internet. So onto the internet, YouTube. So this was the equipment that was used. We did use a nice mic, as I was told many times, and I knew myself, but I was told many times, and I thank the Kauai Sioux people in here because they let me borrow a mic for that, so thank you very much. So Indigenous community to Indigenous community, let's go. And then my iPhone, a makeshift mount that I put together, an old tripod, and used the editing program, the program on YouTube. So the benefits of this I see is the diaspora being able to, accessing resources from anywhere, learning and practice the survival phases in a private, non-stressful setting, noticing and learning of grammatical structures based on language already learned, and showing language documentation resource creation can be done by amateurs like me. Kichimarsi.
So we have about 10 minutes for questions. Do you want to field the questions yourself?
In our language, Kauai Sioux language, we have a lot of the Spanish influence words that we have adopted in our language. How much of that do you see in your language? I noticed some of the pronunciation sounds like French. How much do you come across that?
Well, our language is a synthesis mostly of French and Cree, mostly. There's some influence from Ojibwe as well. It's often said that it's about 50-50, French and Cree origin, but it's not quite as simple as that. We do bring in English, and we'll bring in words. Sometimes we'll use words, and we'll turn them into morphemes, and we'll stick them in the middle of verbs and put Cree stuff in the beginning and the end of it, and make a new word out of it. So, you know, sometimes we'll just borrow them wholesale. Sometimes we'll translate the idea. But yeah, there's a lot. But the French that we have is not like the French today. It's a very different pronunciation, and some of the vocabulary is even different. And even some of the Cree today is not like what we have. I've had some people look at certain words. I can't give you one right now, but and say, that's a really old word in Cree. I haven't heard that in a long time. So, I mean, and I'm not a fluent Cree speaker. I only speak a tiny wee bit of Cree, so I really can't speak to that. But yes, it is a mix. Our language does things, some things that Cree doesn't do, does some things that French doesn't do. One of the things is that double gender thing. Often mixed languages, people think that they get simplified. That is not the case. We complicated things by having two gender systems at the same time. And they agree with the verbs. And so you have animate verbs and inanimate verbs, and you have to agree the nouns with them. It's all intertwined, as Peter Walker would like to say, an intertwined language. Thank you.
I wonder, have you experienced sort of pushback from the part of the community? So you were saying that there's different sort of levels of French and Cree in the area. And I wonder, is it the case that there are some places that are basically rejecting the French to sort of Creeify, or rejecting the Cree to Frenchify?
No, we're pretty proud of the fact that of who we are and our roots. Yeah, that's like, you know, our culture is that way. The thing that I really need people to understand, though, there are different kinds of Michif, and just because they call it Michif doesn't mean it's the same as this is what I call Southern Michif, just to differentiate it, the mixed language. In Northern Saskatchewan, very good friends of mine speak what I call Northern Michif, Isle of La Crosse Michif and Beauval and North, and that's much more Cree-like, and it has French in it, and there are different pronunciations, and so they call it Michif, but that's their identity. And the Michif French speakers, who now don't speak really any of the mixed language, only speak Michif French, that's their identity, the Michif identity. And when we get together, now our linguistic accommodation happens in English mostly. But you will get elders that get together, and my auntie and my community, I had this happen at a table. We just sat around a table, and there are four languages flying at the same time. People are all multilingual, but it all depended on what they wanted to express and who they're expressing it to at that table. Same conversation, same topic, all going on at the same time. So a wonderful show of code mixing, but really about linguistic accommodation and how do you communicate while making people feel comfortable. because that's, we were kin, right? Relations. We don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable, and so that's what it's all about. But there are problems now with dialects, different varieties of Michif, and some people thinking theirs is the be-all and end-all kind of thing, and saying, you know, telling someone else you're not talking right. But a lot of this didn't happen in the past, I don't believe. And my aunties, they don't say things like that, but they're now, because we've lost a lot of the language, and there's, you know, kind of people are really protective over it, and they want their variety to go forward. There's some of that going on, but thank goodness we have people that are interested in variety in the chip, like my friend Olivia, and, you know, that are, you know, and Chris and other people, that we can find maybe ways to steer through that and make sure that everybody is respected and everybody is valued.
I was really interested to see the videos that you shared with us here. Do you know, are these available online as well? Is this something people can find? Or where would we go to look for more examples?
I don't have it. I should have put that in my PowerPoint. I'll put it in the PowerPoint, so if people want it, they can contact me. I should mention this, because we got funding. I didn't, but the project did. So look at that. Notice this, please. My friends, yay! And my elders. And references and bibliography there, and there's my contact information if you're wanting to have this PowerPoint or learn more about the video resources.
They're on YouTube, though, right?
They are on YouTube, yeah. I just didn't put the link on here. I didn't think about it.
Another question. How do you and sort of your family relations feel about the federal language legislation?
I think that's a discussion that needs to happen outside of this one. Thank you for bringing that up, because that's quite a kettle of fish. So we'll talk about that afterwards.
If I ask, do you think it will help with the sorts of things you're doing?
We don't know yet.
Okay.
That's the honest answer. We don't really know yet.
Any other questions for Heather? Okay, thank you.